Thank you for tuning in to the Monday edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In the show today, Taylor Charlstrom has a report on a new research project looking at biochar in almonds. I'll have a look at regional and national agricultural news as well, beginning with regional ag news right after this word from our sponsor.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
According to the USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service in the 2021 California Farm Production Expenditures Report, California's total farm production expenditures totaled $42.2 billion in 2021, 8.6% increase from the 2020 estimate of $41.9 billion. At 10.7%, California had the largest percentage of the 2021 U.S. total expenditures. Expense items showing the largest increase from the previous year were farm services up $1.15 billion, feed up $700 million, and fertilizer, lime, and soil conditioners up $190 million. Expense items showing the largest decrease from the previous year were labor, down $1.46 billion, rent down $370 million, and livestock, poultry, and related expenses down $340 million. Expenditures per California farm averaged $611,087 in 2021, compared with $602,155 in 2020. On average, California producers spent most on labor at $160,870 per farm, farm services at $127,971, and feed at $72,174. California labor officials have issued civil penalties to an employer that fired a group of farm workers it misclassified as independent contractors. That, according to labor experts, on the landmark decision, it could have a profound impact on the agriculture industry. The July 28th decision by the Agricultural Labor Relations Board resulted from a complaint filed by Marisol Jimenez, a farm worker on California's Central Coast who was fired in 2017, alongside five other workers after raising concerns about not receiving proper pay stubs with their weekly paychecks. The ALRB, the state agency tasked with enforcing the Agricultural Labor Relations Act, California's 1975 law that provides labor rights to the state's agricultural employees, found that the workers were unlawfully terminated as well as willfully misclassified by Synagro Farms Incorporated, a Ventura County-based farm that grows kale, lettuce, radishes, cilantro, and parsley. The decision marks the first time the ALRB has recommended civil penalties for willful misclassification of farm workers as independent contractors instead of employees. Nathan Bender, a 16-year agribusiness veteran and co-founder of Baby Potato Category under Tasteful Selections, has assumed the role of president at the organization that he helped to establish in 2010. Nathan, Tasteful Selections COO since January of 2019, will succeed his father, Bob Bender, as president. Mr. Bender will remain with Tasteful Selections as chief executive officer. As part of Tasteful Selection's comprehensive succession plan, when Bob steps down as CEO in 2023, he will remain on a board of directors. He will also oversee special projects in addition to commencing an advisory role. The Benders are Nebraska natives. Nathan earned a bachelor's degree in agribusiness from the University of Nebraska. In 2004, Bob Bender relocated from the Cornhusker State to California's San Joaquin Valley. In 2007, Nathan joined his father in starting the baby potato operation. Tasteful Selections has grown more than 22,000 baby potato acres from its 250-acre humble beginnings. The baby potatoes are grown in Arizona, Nevada, Utah, Washington, Idaho, and Oregon, as well as California. Red, gold, and purple offerings are packed and distributed in Arvin, California, near Bakersfield. Prior to becoming COO, Nathan served as plant manager, director of plant operations, and VP of plant operations for Tasteful Selections. The U.S. Department of Agriculture's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service has confirmed positive identifications of citrus yellow vein clearing virus in the city of Tulare detected during California Department of Food and Agriculture's routine multi-pest survey. It is the first detection of the virus in the United States. CDFA is surveying for the disease in Tulare County residential and commercial properties and will survey in Fresno and Kings counties in the coming months to fully determine the extent of the disease's presence, which is currently limited to the city of Tulare. The survey results will inform the regulatory approach taken by CDFA and APHIS. CDFA began initial delimitation survey work in March in a 1 mile core radius area around the initial find site. Since then, they have conducted additional surveys in the surrounding areas, which have resulted in additional virus confirmations in the city of Tulare, expanding the survey area. CDFA is conducting these surveys to gain knowledge on the extent of the infestation and the potential impacts of the virus, and surveys will be ongoing for the near future. Since the detection of the virus that is new to the United States, these learnings, CDFA's robust pest prevention system that focuses on exclusion and monitoring, as well as CDFA and USDA's experience responding to other vector disease threats, will be critical in developing an appropriate regulatory response. The virus can be spread by vectors as they move from tree to tree feeding on foliage. The vectors include citrus whitefly, green citrus aphid, melon or cotton aphid, and cowpea aphid, which are all known to be present in California. The virus can also be spread through grafting and the movement of infected materials and rootstocks or contaminated tools and equipment. While there is no treatment for the virus as of now, the best mitigation measure is to control the vector and sanitize tools and equipment. To the greatest extent possible, growers are encouraged to urge their field crews to clean and sanitize all their equipment thoroughly in between jobs or when moving between groves.
The Crop Consultant Conference returns on September 28th and 29th in Visalia, California. Co-hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and the Western Region Certified Crop Advisors Association, this two-day conference features two concurrent CE tracks for both PCAs and CCAs. Earn the DPR and CCA credits you need. Network on our trade show floor and join us in giving away scholarships and honorariums presented by Western Region CCA, including the CCA of the Year Award. Take advantage of early bird pricing for only $175. Price goes up after July 31st. Visit progressivecrop.com/conference.
A project funded through CDFA's Healthy Soils program is providing California almond growers a snapshot of the economic and environmental benefits of incorporating biochar from almond trees into soils. The demonstration project, which involves multiple partners, is an initial foray into understanding whether biochar presents a viable regenerative option for almond production systems, according to Tom Stein, California Regional Director of American Farmland Trust, which is administering the project. It's designed to inform producers of the economic and environmental benefits of using biochar, as well as inform the CDFA of those benefits, with the intent of potentially adding biochar to the agency's Healthy Soils Incentives Program.
It's a pretty exciting, hands-on, farmer-focused project. It's a field trial we'll be looking at doing to better understand what the economic and the environmental impacts of biochar applications are in an almond orchard in Madera. It's funded through CDFA's Healthy Soils Program. And over the course of the 3 years, we'll be working with partners at Pacific Farming Company. It's Matt Angel's farm in Madera, Becca Reel's lab at UC Merced, and some of the local resource conservation districts to do the work. Madera Chowchilla RCD and Sierra RCD. And those things will all be helpful to better understand what these impacts and trade-offs are for farmers, TA providers, and CDFA to consider as far as looking to apply biochar. And really this project, it fits within AFT's larger San Joaquin land and water strategy. We're looking to support regenerative farming practices across 100,000 acres in the valley and provide supportive technical and financial assistance to support farmers in doing that. You know, really with this project, it's field-based. We'll be hosting field days where we will be producing char, applying it to the fields, coming back out and talking about the effects. And doing that, through all these farmer tailgate meetings on site. So over the course of those 3 years, we'll perform pretty comprehensive analyses of the soil and the agronomics and the economic impacts associated with these biochar applications, and really digging deeper into some of the nuances and caveats that exist with biochar.
While the concept of biochar has been around for some time, to date, Stein said that use of biochar is still an under-researched option for regenerative agriculture, and one not included in mainstream technical and financial assistance programs in California.
To make biochar, you're basically burning plant materials in an oxygen-limited environment, like a closed kiln, where you end up, kind of looks like a smoldering fire. This isn't new practice, but it isn't really something that's been included in more of the conventional technical and financial assistance programs, and it's not really widely adopted. So we're kind of taking a closer look at that. The other research has been done. This will be adding to that existing literature. Folks at UC Davis, like Sanjay Parikh, have been doing this for over a decade now. Almond Board has supported some research and funding of it. And really we're just, kind of adding more to that existing body of work and grounding it, into, field applications and demonstration events. And specifically within almonds and looking at almond feedstock materials to produce the char. So like prunings and shells. So it's more focused in that regard and specifically in the valley.
The Biochar and Almond Project is one that could take carbon from the materials used and put it back in the ground as a soil amendment, and could be a way to help reduce greenhouse gas emissions in a way that allows farmers to have an active role in combating climate change. As for Stein's own hopes for the project,
it would be great if we saw some pretty exciting impacts and opportunities, specifically, as far as a way to increase the soil organic carbon, some water holding capacities, some soil tilth improvement in the site we're looking at, which does have some infiltration problems, real practical solutions in a way that, biochar and other conservation practices can help resolve. I see biochar as another tool in the toolbox for folks to consider, and we're open to help, ground truth that a little bit more in this project.
In addition to the Almond Project, a project looking at biochar's ecosystem impact in an olive orchard also was awarded in the recent round of fundings from CDFA. The applicant, Center for Land-Based Learning, is looking to increase knowledge of the carbon sequestration and greenhouse gas reduction potential of biochar in a new 5-acre olive orchard, as well as address knowledge gaps on biochar's ecosystem impacts and assist in streamlining methodology for its wide-scale adoption. More on that in a future episode. For My Ag Life, I'm Taylor Charlstrom.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, supporting the industry with on-farm innovation through production research, advocacy for government programs, and driving consumer demand. Doing more together.
USDA Rural Development Undersecretary Soshiel Torres-Small says the agency will begin accepting applications on September 6th for funding to expand access to high-speed internet in rural America. USDA is making the next round of funding available through the ReConnect program, which received new funds from the bipartisan infrastructure law. High-speed internet connects people and small businesses to new markets and helps people in rural America build brighter futures, according to Torres-Small. For too long, many rural communities have been left out of the digital economy. The department will begin accepting applications on up to $150 million in loans, up to $300 million in loan and grant combinations, and up to $700 million in grants. USDA made several improvements to the ReConnect program in round four to increase the availability of funding in rural areas where residents and businesses lack access to affordable high-speed internet. More information is available at rd.usda.gov. Earlier this week, the Environmental Protection Agency submitted a petition to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals requesting a partial rehearing of its glyphosate interim decision. In that ruling, the panel vacated the interim decision's human health risk assessment and sent back the ecological risk assessment to the agency to complete an Endangered Species Act analysis by October 1st. The EPA is seeking a partial rehearing because of the ecological part of the decision. In its request, the EPA says that finalizing an ESA consultation is a multi-year process for which the panel only granted 106 days. EPA also says it cannot comply with the order because it has to coordinate with other agencies that are not part of the lawsuit. The agency requested the court grant the rehearing to consider lifting the October 1st deadline. The Energy Information Administration says ethanol output jumped to its highest level in a month while inventories increased slightly. Production of the biofuel rose to an average of 1.04 million bushels a day during the week ending July 29th. That's up from 1.02 million barrels daily during the previous week and is the highest output since the 7 days that ended July 1st. In the Midwest, output averaged 984,000 barrels a day, up from 962,000 a previous week and also the highest point in a month. Production in the Gulf Coast increased to 25,000 barrels a day on average from 23,000 barrels. That was all the weekly gains as the East Coast output was unchanged at 12,000 barrels a day and Rocky Mount production remained at 15,000 barrels a day. West Coast output dropped by 7,000 barrels a day. Stockpiles rose modestly to 23.39 million barrels a day during the week. The U.S. hemp industry is having its share of growing pains. USDA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford explains.
On Capitol Hill the other day, the opening gavel for a House Agriculture Subcommittee hearing on hemp, the first ever House Ag hearing focused on that crop, which has seen quite a reversal in fortune since the 2018 Farm Bill legalized it. 2019 did see a big increase in acreage.
Since 2019, however, we have seen a dramatic decrease, as many states have.
Colorado Ag Commissioner Kate Greenberg told the panel in 2014 in her state, hemp acreage was only 1,800 acres. In 2019, it zoomed up to over 87,000. Now it's estimated at only about 3,700. What happened?
Overproduction in 2019 led to a rapid saturation of the market.
Same story in another state.
We're still growing hemp in Kentucky, but with smaller acreage.
Kentucky Ag Commissioner Ryan Quarles, and again,
the amount of hemp grown far outpaced demand.
Several experts said demand is being constrained, partly because the market is waiting for the Food and Drug Administration to issue guidance on production and sales of CBD products and on the use of hemp as food for livestock or humans. Ryan Quarles told the panel,
without clear direction from the FDA regarding products containing hemp-derived CBD, large retailers will not carry CBD products, and many business leaders are reluctant to move forward with the development and manufacturing of these products.
And it's not just uncertainty about CBD products. As you know, hemp can be used to make lots of things, strong plastics and wood floors, fabrics, many items. But with a new industry, it's very much a catch-22 situation. Farmers won't grow it if they don't think someone's going to buy it. And on the other side, Eric Wong with the U.S. Hemp Roundtable says as far as potential manufacturers of products using hemp,
they want to know the supply chain exists. Anyone of any size company who's going to use hemp, whether it be in car doors or building supplies, wants to know if they introduce a product to the market, they will have a controlled supply chain that will be there. And that's the big gap that we have today.
And Colorado Ag Commissioner Kate Greenberg says there are certainly gaps in the supply chain in her state revolving not so much about whether farmers can grow the hemp, but rather
primarily around processing and manufacturing here in this country. I think we have a lot of production capacity and incredible farmers who are able to grow fantastic crops. We need to make sure every step along the supply chain across these market opportunities is strengthened and grown.
So the experts say not to expect a massive new industry to rise up suddenly and quickly. It's more likely going to be a slow, steady pace for the U.S. hemp industry. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Oil prices have declined to the lowest point in almost 6 months, caused by weakening gasoline demand and recessionary fears weighing down markets. Bloomberg News says West Texas Intermediate fell to $87.78 a barrel, a level last seen during the weeks before Russia invaded Ukraine. The price drop last week was jump-started by government data showing Americans are driving less than they did
in the summer of 2021,
along with fears of a slowing economy, which have intensified with the potential impacts on crude demand.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
Leveraging the almond industry's history and strength, messaging and coordinating strategic partners across the almond community, the broader agricultural sector and supply chain and transportation allies, Almond Alliance has been coordinating a three-month blitz, which has resulted in increased equipment availability, services restored, and almond export increases. The blitz, called the quote-unquote Almond Express, in partnership with Blue Diamond Growers, worked with railroad companies, logistics companies, and drayage carriers, and private landholders to create dedicated ramps for direct-to-terminal delivery of almond containers in the Los Angeles Long Beach port.
You know, facing the challenges coming out of supply chain disruption over the last year and a half, 2 years almost now, we had a number of challenges to address. And so we were looking for more evacuation points. And so to set the stage again, it's important to remember that between September of 2021 and April of 2022, we had what we would call carry out or a backlog of about 1.3 billion pounds, which is roughly 50% of what we export. The majority of our exports, 85% of them, were through Oakland on a truck getting to Oakland. And so as Oakland increasingly in the last year, which contributed to that 1.3 billion pound backlog, as well as a massive price degradation of almost $2 billion just to almonds, the reason for which was not only congestion of the imports coming into Southern California, that time it was taking for boats to get into Los Angeles and Long Beach was taking so long, carriers stopped finding economic viability in stopping at Oakland to pick up exports and to move on. And so for us, it became a crisis point of finding multiple evacuation points. We'd built our house on one pillar and we needed to find other places to stabilize ourselves. So that's when we started working, not only leveraging our own history and our own volumes, especially through our industry partners and a number of others, to get carriers to the table to understand what would it take for us to meet them where they were? What would it take for us to get adequate receiving windows and have equipment available? And so we leveraged that relationship and those histories, both as our industry and the data that we had with that. We're very data rich. We knew our volumes. We knew our volumes over time, historically, where they were going, where the services were. And we started then convening with the appropriate partners. So the Almond Alliance formed a tiger team of partners and members throughout our supply chain, from our growers to haulers, shellers, and processors, handlers, truckers, and logistics, and even folks from the ocean line side of things as well, to really look at what would it take for us to find these other exit points? What could we do to coordinate our community to invest in these opportunities? And so through that, we brought in all forces to bear, political, working on the federal level and the state level to continue to put pressure on from a policy perspective and allow us the freedom to look for these solutions.
In direct communications with logistics companies, Betancourt described it as the almond industry essentially laying down the law and describing how they want to be treated in a way that was mutually beneficial for both parties. Through these talks, Almond Alliance discovered an even faster way to get almonds to the port, railroads.
If a rail car delivers to a terminal, it is prioritized on the ship. And so we were able to solve for the receiving window conditions, which also helped with our allocations with the ship. The ship could have better certainty. The carriers could have better certainty on what volumes were coming. And so we kind of backed into the solution from that standpoint. Well, how do you get things on a train? You needed to look for rail spurs. So we started identifying rail spurs privately held in both Northern California, where about 50% of our volume comes from, and Southern California, where 50% of our volume comes from. Once we identified those rail spurs and partnering with rail, understanding that they have trains that are moving regularly, either once a week or a couple days a week, we knew we had the certainty of delivery, of movement. Then it was, okay, where are we getting the carriers? Or where are we getting the containers? And we started looking not only with our carrier partners who knew, we now had that open dialogue with them. We knew that they needed to evacuate empties out of the interior part of the country. Well, guess what? We have rail who can help us with that. What we managed to do in all of that is we added what are new products in the shipping services. And so we then had to work with our partners with the Specialty Crop Trade Association, so SCTC, working to make sure these contracts opened up. Then train our industry on how to communicate and make direct bookings with the carriers. So we've reimagined the relationship with the carriers as well to make these products available to our industry. And so it is streamlined in the, you know, it's interesting. We've added processes that have created efficiencies as well as changed the way we relate to each other and changed the way we communicate with each other in terms of how we make these bookings. We provide data and information so we can have better foresight into what resources we need available and where. Have opened up these lines of communication. So now it's about kind of bringing that to scale and really working to get the kinks moved out of it. All the pieces are in place and now it's kind of smoothing them out. And so we're really excited and I have to commend our community. The almond industry looked at this and said, we're going to solve this problem for ourselves and went all in. And we have had tremendous support from the state and the feds. Allowing us to move through this process, reimagine the way we could have true supply chain resilience for the agricultural community of California and the United States.
One big aspect of this new open line of communication was that it allowed for a new and better relationship with the almond industry. The Almond Alliance and partners are now able to provide context to the carrier so that the industry is no longer just numbers on a spreadsheet, but truthfully a dynamic customer base with specific data and needs that can be prepared for and responded to quickly.
There was this notion in the way that we related to each other, and for no negative reason, it just made sense. We were all just numbers on a spreadsheet or in an order form or in an online booking. And there was no context to those numbers. There was no context to the data. As we first started having these conversations with carriers, one of the first things we heard was, well, you know, we know agriculture is seasonal, and we handed them our exports by destination by month over the course of 1 year. So the volumes broken down by month by destination, and we were able to show them that we were consistent for multiple years in a row by month, by volume, by destination. And yep, we have a spike during Chinese New Year, and we have a spike during holy days in India, and then we are consistent here, 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 and here. And you can see consistently what our top ports of call are and where they've been for the last so many years. And so, you know, it allowed us to say, no, there's context to this, you know, and to kind of have that open dialogue and to be able to help educate them on what the numbers mean from our perspective. And when we say, hey, we're going to have a $2.6 billion crop, this is what that means. And for them to be able to explain that to us, I think was truly invaluable because we knew, like all things, when you're dealing in a collaborative solution set, you have to find success for everyone in that process. And so when we had a better understanding of what their challenges were and what their driving decision-making factors were, we knew how to appeal to that. We knew how to make that fit with ours. We could see the alignment between our industries. And it has brought them to bear as an incredibly exciting new partner. I mean, it is so much fun when I get off the phone now with different carriers who we talk to weekly. And I foresee for the rest of my career, whoever is working in this job is going to have to have these relationships with the carriers going forward.
While the rollout of the Almond Express, as well as the Ocean Shipping Reform Act of 2022 are big wins for the almond industry, it's important to not look through the world through rose-colored glasses. There's still a long way to go. But Betancourt said the almond industry has a strategic path forward.
The next steps for us are we need to continue to build out the resilience and functionality of these options and solidify them where they are, they make the most sense. I think you're going to see a lot of pop-up things happen. And even some of the parts of what we've worked on, they may not be the permanent option, but they're teaching us where the permanent option needs to be. We need to continue to invest in this modernized flexibility and of our infrastructure. So I think there's going to be a lot more investment on rail, especially as we look for systems and services going east. And I think we're going to see a lot more investment in where I'd like to see a lot more investment in truly where we're struggling still is in chassis And really working through those, not only the box rules, but even just having the physical equipment available. And that's something we are actively discussing and trying to find solutions to, not only in the private sector, but also working with the federal government, USDA and DOT and others.
This is Taylor Charlstrom reporting for MyAgLife.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.